It is Sunday, October 16th, and we are thrilled to be kicking off a brand new Masechta together, Masechta's Beitza. This is Rabbi Larry Rothwax, Magid Shir for the Daf HaShavua series, in conjunction with OU Torah, the Daf HaShavua Foundation, and Congregation Beth Aaron. Before we begin the Mishnah inside, just several words of introduction. Masechta's Beitza deals with the laws of Yom Tov. There is a relatively larger Masechta, Masechta Shabbos, which covers in extensive detail the laws of the 39 Melachos, the 39 prohibited categories of work which one may not do on Shabbos. For the most part, the 39 melachos apply not only to Shabbos, but Yom Tov as well. There are, however, several important dinim, several laws, which apply exclusively to Yom Tov, and it is those topics which is the subject of Masechas Beitza. The opening Mishnah presents us with three cases which are a matter of dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, all pertaining to Yom Tov, and after we have a chance to take a closer look, we'll be able to understand a little more about what these three cases have in common. The opening case in the Mishnah involves an egg which was laid by a chicken on Yom Tov. Beitza shenolda b'Yom Tov. Beis Shammai omrim teyachel, uBeis Hillel omrim lo teyachel. Beis Shammai says that if an egg is laid on Yom Tov, it is permissible to eat it, whereas Beis Hillel says lo teyachel. It is prohibited to consume such an egg. Rashi explains that the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is only bo bayom. We're only arguing about eating the egg on that very day itself. However, all would agree that on a subsequent day, it would be permissible to eat this egg. Again, Beis Shammai says, teyochel, even on that very day itself it may be eaten. Beis Hillel omrim, lo teyochel, you would have to wait until a later day. What is the basis for their positions? So Rashi says, "B'Gemara mafarish taima." We will have to wait till we get to the Gemara to understand exactly what is the basis for Beis Shammai's opinion that you could eat it that day, and what is the explanation for Beis Hillel's opinion that you would have to wait. The Mishnah then continues with another debate between Beis Shammai and Hillel, this one involving a completely different case. Again, just a couple of words of introduction. We know that on Pesach, it is prohibited for a person to eat chametz. It is also prohibited for a person to derive benefit from chametz, and it is even prohibited for a person to own chametz on Pesach. This is known as the Isser of Baye Roe u Baye Matze. The prohibition does not only apply to chametz itself, which is leavened bread, but it even applies to something called Seor, which is dough which has fermented to the extent that it can actually be used as a leavening agent, such as yeast, for other doughs. The machlokes that is found in our Mishnah between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is how much chametz exactly must a person own in order to have violated the Isser of Bayirah u'Bayimotzei. So Beis Shammai says there's a difference between Seor, again a leavening agent, and chametz, leavened bread. Beis Shammai says Seor b'kazayis, the chametz b'kikoseves. When it comes to Seor, when it comes to a leavening agent, if a person merely owns a kazayis, which is the size of an olive, he will have violated the prohibition of Bayirah v'Bayimotzei, the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach. When it comes to chametz, however, when it comes to leavened bread, so the shear is slightly larger, b'kikoseves, the size of a date. Beis Hillel omrin ze v'zeh b'kazayis. Beis Hillel says, however, there is no difference between Seor and chametz, and the shear, the measure, is the same by both, namely a kazayis. So Beis Shammai says that there's a difference between Seor and Chametz when trying to identify the shear, the amount that a person would have to own in order to violate the Isser Bayirah v'Bayimotzei. And Beis Hillel says there is no difference between Seor and Chametz. What do these two cases have in common? Namely, an egg that is laid on Yom Tov and the amount of Seor or Chametz that a person must own in order to violate the Isser of Bayirah v'Bayimotzei. So both Rashi and Tosfos explain that what they have in common is as follows. These cases in the Mishnah, and actually including a third case which we haven't yet seen, are all cases in which Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue about something having to do with Yom Tov. And in these particular cases, Beis Shammai is more lenient than Beis Hillel. And this is actually unusual, because typically, when Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue, Beis Hillel usually represents the more lenient view. In these cases, however, says Rashi, Hane tlos mili, these three matters, have a mikule Beis Shammai umechumre Beis Hillel. These are among the more lenient positions of Beis Shammai and the more stringent positions of Beis Hillel, and they all pertain once again to Yom Tov. And that's why these cases are mentioned together and grouped together in this Mishnah. The third case is what follows in the Mishnah, and here as well, a couple of words of introduction would be in order. The Mishnah over here is talking about the case of a person who shechted, who slaughtered a chaya, which means a non-domesticated animal, or an oaf or a bird on Yom Tov. On Shabbos, of course, one is not permitted to shecht an animal. On Yom Tov, on the other hand, it is permitted to shecht an animal that is going to be eaten that day. This is because on Yom Tov you're permitted to go ahead and do several malachos, which would normally be prohibited if they are being done mishum ochel nefesh for the purpose of preparing food. The Mishnah is talking about, however, a related concern, and that is that the Torah says that when you shecht a chaya or an oaf, you have to go ahead and cover the blood with dust after the shechita. This is a mitzvah which is called kisui hadam, literally the covering of the blood. So the Mishnah over here is discussing what happens if you shecht a chaya or an oaf in Yom Tov and you do not have the actual dust prepared to fulfill the mitzvah of kisui hadam. So the Mishnah continues, Hashochet chaya v'oaf b'yom tov. If a person goes ahead and slaughters a chaya or an oaf on Yom Tov, Beis Shammai Yomrim yachpor b'deke v'chase. Beis Shammai says, merely go ahead at that point and take a shovel, insert it into the ground, and you can shovel the dirt then and fulfill the mitzvah of kisui hadam at that point. Beis Hillel says, no, lo yishchot elim kein hayilo afer muchon mibal yom. Beis Hillel says you have no business slaughtering the animal in the first place unless you already had offer dirt that was muchan, that was prepared mib od yom from before Yom Tov began. Beis Shammai says you can go ahead l'chadchila from the beginning and shecht an animal and then acquire the dirt later. Beis Hillel says you have no business shechting an animal in the first place elim kein hayilo afer muchan mibal yom unless you had offer, once again, dirt that was prepared beforehand. However, it continues the Mishnah, Umodim she'im shachat she'yachpar b'dek of yechase. Everyone agrees that if you already shechted the animal, if you already slaughtered the bird, let's say, at that point, you can go ahead and shovel the dirt necessary in order to do the kisui hadam. So, Beis Hillel is instructing you not to do this shechita, not to do the slaughtering beforehand, if you do not have the prepared dirt, but if you have done it already, then Beis Hillel agree, just like Beis Shammai, that at that point you can go ahead and shovel dirt necessary in order to do the kisui hadam. What exactly is the problem with shoveling, with moving dirt? So that as well is going to be discussed in greater detail in the Gemara. The Mishnah then continues, She'efer kira muchanu, which seems to be read as a continuation of the previous discussion, although the Gemara is going to point out that it doesn't read so smoothly. Efer kira muchanhu means the ashes of a stove are already considered prepared. The problem is we were not talking about ashes of a stove. We were talking about dust that had to be shoveled from the ground. So the Gemara is going to try to explain what this means, but for our purposes at the moment, we will simply translate the words she'efer kira muchanhu. That ashes, once again, that come from a stove are considered muchan, they are considered to have been prepared beforehand. Remember, of course, that when it comes to the subject of muksa, when we say that something is muksa on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, that means that it has not been set aside before Shabbos or Yom Tov with any designated purpose. Muchan is essentially the opposite of the concept of muksa, because muchan means that it has been set aside. It has a designated purpose beforehand, and it is therefore permissible to move such an object on Shabbos or, as it is in this case, on Yom Tov. So to summarize, we've seen the Mishnah presents three different cases, which are all a matter of dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. In all three cases, Beis Shammai presents the more lenient view than Beis Hillel. And of course, as we saw, all these three cases relate to Yom Tov. The Gemara will now begin an extensive discussion about all three cases, but we're going to really be spending time for the first daf or so on the first case. The first case, once again, was involving a beitza shenolda v'yom tov, a beitza, an egg that was laid on Yom Tov. So it begins the Gemara, b'mayas kinan, with what case are we talking about over here? In other words, what is the type of chicken, what type of chicken actually laid this egg? Well, what do you mean? So the Gemara explains that there really are two different types of chickens that could have laid an egg. You can be talking about a chicken which was a tarnagoles ha'omedes la'achila. Maybe it was a tarnagoles, a chicken that was set aside for the purpose of eating. I was going to take this chicken at some point and shecht it and eat it. So says the Gemara, Ilema, if you will tell me that we're talking about a tarnagoles ha'omedes la'achila, so then my taimayu the Beis Hillel. What then is the reason for Beis Hillel who say that you cannot go ahead and eat this egg? After all, uchla de ifratu, which means what you are really doing is eating food which has been separated from another food. Tosfos explains very clearly over here. What does it mean, uchla de ifrat? Perish. This means ochel hanifrad mina ochelhu. This means food which has been separated from another piece of food. Or maybe be like taking a slice of bread from an entire loaf of bread. The habetza shenolda nifrada hi min hatarnagoles. The beitza that has been laid, the egg that has been laid on Yom Tif, was separated from the chicken. V'ibayi shachidla. If a person wants, he can even go ahead and shech the chicken itself. V'achri kol sheg bagava. He can eat any part of the chicken he wants. So says the Gemara, how do we understand Beis Hillel? If we're talking about a tanagolas almenes lachila, so then we should be able to go ahead and eat the egg on Yom Tif. Because if you want, you could eat the entire chicken. In which case, the egg is what's called uchla de ifras, which means, once again, it is food which has been separated from food. Ella, says the Gemara, rather, you'll tell me, we are talking about a tarnagoles ha'omedes legadel beitzen. We're talking about a chicken that has not been designated for the purpose of eating. Rather, it is a tarnagoles ha'omedes legadel beitzen. The function of this chicken is merely to lay eggs. I have no intention of eating this tarnagoles. It is not considered food as far as I'm concerned. Its sole and exclusive purpose is to lay eggs. If that's the case, says the Gemara, my taimai hu de Beis Shammai. What is the reason for the position of Beis Shammai? Beis Shammai says that you can go ahead and take an egg that is laid on Yom Tif and eat it on Yom Tif itself. What could possibly be the reason for Beis Shammai if in fact this is the tarnagoles, which is omedes legado beitzim? If its whole purpose is to lay eggs, so then this egg is what's called muksa. It's muksa. What do you mean it's muksa? It's muksa because it was not set aside before Yom Tif. Why was it not set aside before Yom Tif? Because it didn't exist before Yom Tif. There was no egg before Yom Tif. So obviously the egg is muksa. So the Gemara says, what's going on over here? If we're talking about a tarnagoles omedes lachila, then there's no way to understand why Beis Hillel would say that you are prohibited from eating the egg. If we're talking about a tarnagoles, a chicken which is omedes legado beitzim, a tarnagoles which is set aside to lay eggs, there's no way to understand why Beis Shammai would say it's permissible to eat such an egg. So the Gemara immediately counters this question and says, "Umay kusha, what's the problem? Dilma, maybe, perhaps, Beis Shammai less luhu muksa. Maybe Beis Shammai does not hold of muksa." What does it mean, Beis Shammai doesn't hold of muksa? How could you say such a thing? Is there such an opinion that there's no such thing as muksa? So the answer is, sort of. Rashi points out, Dilma ki Reb Shimon svira luhu. Maybe Beis Shammai hold like Reb Shimon. And Rashi is referring to a dispute which is found in Masach HaShabbos on Daf Mimdalid, in which the Tanoim, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda over there argue about the parameters of muksa. The truth of the matter is that everyone agrees that there is a concept of muksa. However, there is a difference of opinion among the Tanoim as to what in fact is considered muksa. So what the Gemara means to say over here is perhaps Beis Shammai follows the more lenient opinion, namely the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, and in this case would say there is no muksa. That would explain why Beis Shammai would say that you can eat such an egg, because even though it came from a tarnagoles, which is omedes legado beitzim, a tarnagoles which was designated for the purpose of laying eggs, maybe Beis Shammai would say that it's permissible to eat such an egg, because after all, they have a very lenient view of what muksa means. So says the Gemara, no. Kasul kadaitin, afilu man deshari b'muktzah, b'nolad asar. The Gemara explains, the reason why we question the Yeshit of Beis Shammai is because we assume that even one who would be lenient, even one who would permit muktzah in this case, would still say nolad is asar. What is nolad? Nolad literally means something which was created, something which was born, in this case, something which was laid on Yomtis. Meaning what? Rashi over here explains this very well. It's kedai to see Rashi inside. Rashi, Dibur Maskel Kosil Kadaitin, says the following. L'hochi parchin on my tamayi de Beis Shammai. For this reason, the Gemara asks, what is the reason for Beis Shammai? The Kosil Kadaitin, because we thought, at this point, the afilu of Rabbi Shimon, the shari v'muksa, even according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that muksa is permissible, b'nolad asir. He would say that when it comes to nolad, it is prohibited. Why? The ilu v'muksa, because when it comes to muksa, sfirale lo makatsi inish midaite midit chazile. Rabbi Shimon, and in this case perhaps Beis Shammai, who has a very lenient view of muksa, maintains that view because they say, listen, at the end of the day, a person can reserve the possibility in his mind that he's going to use anything on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. So I will have a very lenient view of muksa because just because I didn't specify specifically what I'm going to do with this before Shabbos and Yom Tov, anything's possible. So I set aside everything in my mind. Aval nolad, but something that is first going to be created, something that is first going to be introduced to the world on Yom Tov or on Shabbos, lo havi yada. I didn't even know about it. Then havi died to yilave. There's no way that I could say I had intention, I had in mind that I was going to go ahead and use this if it didn't even exist. So the Gemara essentially defends itself. Originally, the Gemara asked the question, what are we talking about over here? If we're talking about a tanagola sameres lachila, if we're talking about a chicken that is designated for eating, then what could possibly be the reason for Beis Hillel who say that it is prohibited from eating such an egg? And if we're talking about a tanagola, so medes lagava beitzim, if we're talking about a chicken which is designated for laying eggs, what could possibly be the reason for Beis Shammai who say that it is permissible to eat this egg? After all, it's muksa. To which the Gemara says, umay kusha, why is that a question? Dilma Beis Shammai less than muksa. Maybe Beis Shammai doesn't hold of muksa. Feels like Reb Shimon. So the Gemara says, no. The question is justified. Gives kasil gadaitin, because we are assuming at this point that afilu man deshari b'muksa, even one who would allow muksa, b'nolat asar. They would still say that something that is created on Yom Tov is still going to be prohibited. There is a difference between something which existed beforehand, in which case we can entertain the possibility that there will be a lenient view that will say everything which is created beforehand may have a purpose on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. But if we're talking about something that didn't even exist, so our assumption is that even the more lenient positions, such as Rabbi Shimon and Beis Shammai in this case, would in fact be machmir. So the Gemara essentially defends itself and leaves us with a question. The question is, what type of tanagolas are we talking about over here? And this will help us understand what exactly is the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. When we learn next, we will begin to see the first of four answers that the Gemara is going to give to this question, which will help us understand exactly what is the machlokes, what is the dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel.